Frank Muir goes into inventions and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Wonderful invention the x-ray is. Once a doctor was demonstrating an x-ray machine to a group of students, and there was a patient behind the screen. The doctor said, "Now, right, we can see from the bone structure that the patient's right leg is shorter than his left, which accounts for his limp. You in the front, what would you do in a case like this?" And the student said, "Yes, I think I should probably limp too." Two cavemen inventors were talking to each other. One said, "Why don't you invent the wheel?" He said, "I would, but you see, if I did, my son would want to keep borrowing the car."
Alfred.
Yes.
What do you get if you cross a dog with a giraffe?
You get an animal that barks at aeroplanes.
What do you get if you cross a cowboy with a dentist?
Hop along a cavity.
What do you get if you cross a tambourine with a submarine?
The Salvation Navy.
What do you get? Oh, go on then. Come on. On the other hand, what do you get if you cross a mouse with an elephant?
You get enormous great holes in the skirting board.
Inventions have probably brought benefits and miseries to mankind in equal amounts. Certainly, there's something magnificent about the creative abilities of the human mind. But unfortunately, these abilities are not always directed to the common good. When they are, of course, the benefits are enormous. Francis Bacon.
The real and legitimate goal of the sciences is the endowment of human life with new inventions and riches.
There don't seem to be any hard and fast rules about inventions and how and when they occur. Jonathan Swift.
The greatest inventions were produced in times of ignorance, as the use of the compass, gunpowder, and printing, and by the dullest nation as the Germans.
Mark Twain.
Name the greatest of all inventors, accident.
But however inventions arise, they cause great excitement when they do. I suppose it's the appeal of novelty. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
If a man can write a better book, preach a better sermon, or make a better mouse trap than his neighbor, though he build his house in the woods, the world will make a beaten path to his door.
Perhaps, just as every person is supposed to have one book in him, everyone has one invention, too. The problem, though, is having the basic idea.
I was talking to you about my plans to think of something absolutely new and revolutionary which would change the whole face of the world. Well, I just thought of it. It's called the plib. It's an amazing thing, the plib. I thought of it in the bath. It's very simple and small and amazing. It's very peculiar that nobody thought of it before. It's about 1/4 inch long and 1/4 inch wide, and it's completely round and white. And what you do is drop it into a glass of water and it fizzes. Then you drink down the plibby substance and it cures you of anything. Isn't that wonderful? If you've got rheumatism in the knees, all you have to do is take one plib and within seconds all your troubles are over. And the amazing thing is that it works for every kind of disease. It's a really wonderful invention, the plib. I went along to the patent office with it yesterday to register it in my name. I went in there and I said, "Excuse me, I've just invented the plib and I want to get it patented before anybody steals the idea." And they said, "Oh yes, what exactly is this plib of yours?" So I explained to them what it was, and they were very interested and asked to see one. And so I had to tell them I hadn't exactly made one yet. It was still in the ideas stage. What I wanted to do was to patent the idea first and then do the research to get the plib into production. They said that wasn't possible unless I actually made a working plib. I've never heard such rubbish in my life. It's the people who have the ideas who deserve all the credit. I mean, anyone can make a rotten old wooden wheel, but it takes brains to think of the idea of the wheel. I wonder what happened to poor old Einstein. He had that wonderful idea about splitting the atom and causing enormous explosions. I suppose he came along to the patent office with his diagrams, they'd have said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Einstein, but I'm afraid you'll have to show us one of your explosions before a patent." "Sir, then bloody well right if you blow them up." I shouldn't think he ever managed to get the idea patented. Very sad, really. You ought to be getting sixpence every time there's an atomic explosion. They treat you out of everything these days. I tried arguing with them, but it was no good. I said, look here, my good man. If you don't register my flip, I'll come round and smash you round the face. And he said, oh, really? How very interesting. Perhaps you'd like to have a look at a very new invention that's just come in. I said I would. He reached under his desk and got out a long spindly pole with a sponge on the end of it, covered in horrible sticky muck. I think it was fig jam. He said, this is a very fascinating device that we in the patent office call a knit poker. Then he banged me in the face with it and kicked me downstairs.
Peter Cook, as E.L. Wistie, inventor. And no invention could happen without the dedicated effort and concentration of an innovator with a vision. An inventor, in fact. A definition from Ambrose Bierce.
Inventor, a person who makes an ingenious arrangement of wheels, levers, and springs and believes it's civilization.
Inventors don't always get the credit for their pioneering work until it's too late to be of much use to them. Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Inventors and men of genius have almost always been regarded as fools at the beginning and very often at the end of their careers.
Not only are they regarded as fools, but often as complete madmen. How readily the words mad and inventor go together. And how vivid the image they present to the mind. S.J. Perelman.
I guess I'm just an old mad scientist at bottom. Give me an underground laboratory, half a dozen atom smashers, and a beautiful girl in a diaphanous veil waiting to be turned into a chimpanzee, and I care not who writes the nation's laws.
Some inventors search for less world-shattering discoveries. Inventors like Victor Borger's grandfather.
My grandfather was born in Denmark. He was Danish after his mother and Swedish after a friend of his father's. He was one of the great inventors of his time. He invented the burglar alarm, which unfortunately was stolen from him. He was a brilliant man. He was, among other things, a PhD. Just a... So was his wife. However, besides being a brilliant, he also was a great chemist. He was the one who invented the cure for which there was no disease in the world. Unfortunately, his wife later caught the cure and died. He was a strange personality. He always experimented with something. Once he crossed an Idaho potato with a sponge. Imagine that silly idea. It tasted horrible. But it sure held a lot of gravy.
That's Victor Borger, who reaches those parts which other comedians cannot reach. The process whereby things get invented is a mixture of research and accident. The inventor may just stumble on a world-shattering innovation while looking for something utterly different, even something trivial. Eric Hoffer.
We are more ready to try the untried when what we do is inconsequential. Hence the remarkable fact that many inventions had their birth as toys.
As well as accident, there's guesswork, which is important in all areas of science. To illustrate this point, Mr. Alfred Marx, in his best voice, will now recite a short poem, The Microbe, by Hilaire Belloc.
The microbe is so very small, you cannot make him out at all. But many sanguine people hope to see him through a microscope. His jointed tongue that lies beneath the 100 curious rows of teeth. His 7 tufted tails with lots of lovely pink and purple spots, on each of which a pattern stands composed of 40 separate bands, his eyebrows of a tender green. All these have never yet been seen, but scientists who ought to know assure us that they must be so. Oh, let us never, never doubt what nobody is sure about.
But guesswork alone isn't sufficient for the inventor. Alfred North Whitehead.
Necessity is the mother of invention is a silly proverb. Necessity is the mother of futile dodges is much nearer to the truth. The basis of the growth of modern invention is science, and science is almost wholly the outgrowth of pleasurable intellectual curiosity.
And that pleasurable intellectual curiosity leads to research and more research and experiment and trial and error and more errors. Sometimes it must get very depressing and make great demands on the would-be inventor's faith in himself. André Gide.
One does not discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore for a very long time.
No, it's very hard work. A report from Design magazine.
A designer or manufacturer who keeps his nose glued to his own grindstone will have some difficulty in keeping his ear to the ground at the same time.
Some people just get involved in research for its own sake, and some of it is quite fascinating.
Incidentally, I'm a rat expert, you know, and I know all about rats. They do great things with rats now, you know, in the research laboratories. With the little electrodes they hook to their heads, they can satisfy their hunger urge and their drinking urge and their sex urge. And they took one rat and sent him out, and they put the electrodes on his head and sent him out, and he got close to a wall, and they pushed the button and satisfied his sex urge, you know. So he came back and he said, "Oh, man, that was crazy." And the other rat said, "Well, what'd she look like?" He says, "Oh, I don't know, something like a wall, but..." And they're going to fix these things up, you know, like those old 4-for-a-quarter photograph booths you could go in, you know, and draw the curtain. And they're going to fix them up and put these electrode booths, you know, in the train stations and bus stations, you know, and everywhere. And then you'll just go in and put your quarter in, and you set the dial at a whatever you like, you know. A 17-year-old redhead, or a 19-year-old blonde, a 60-year-old gray-headed lady, or a nice old man, whatever you like. The guys do fight over the settings, though. Had a lot of trouble because one guy goes in and he puts a lot of quarters in that 17-year-old redhead thing, you know. Because, geez, I spent a lot of money on her, man. That's my chick. Don't use that setting.
That was Jack Sheldon, an American. Experiments with animals are a subject on which people get very heated. I suppose the old argument is true, that anything is justified if the good it does outweighs the harm. With some experiments, this justification is difficult to make. From the Corning Glassworks magazine.
Recent tests conducted by a zoologist prove that grasshoppers hear with their legs. In all cases, the insects hopped when a tuning fork was sounded nearby. There was no reaction to the stimulus, however, when the insect's legs had been removed.
Mind you, after detailed research, you'll know all about animals and be able to answer even quite complicated questions about them. Unlike the Detroit News, in which the following exchange appeared. Question: how can you tell the age of a snake?
Answer: it is extremely difficult to tell the age of a snake unless you know exactly when it was born.
Well, it's true. It's scientific, isn't it? And now, a report on an experiment.
In a number of mathematics books, they made reference to something that either proves infinity or the law of probability. They claim that if you take an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters, and you set them down, and they just type away, that eventually, given enough time, they would type all the great books. Yes. Now, they're going to type a lot of gibberish, but eventually they will type all the great books. Now, if they ever tried this, they would have to hire guys, you know, to check the monkeys to see if they were turning out anything worthwhile. So, I would like to present a day in the life of one of these monitors. Harry, I'm going to check post 14, see if he's got anything. Oh, boy. I don't think that poor devil's ever going to write anything, you know that? Harry, hold on. Post 15 here has something. I think this is famous or something. To be or not to be, that is the Gazornan plat.
Oh, well, Bob Newhart. All that hard work and experimentation is justified if the end product is useful. Henry Ward Beecher.
A tool is but the extension of a man's hand, and a machine is but a complex tool. And he that invents a machine augments the power of a man and the well-being of mankind.
And the more you invent, the better you get at it. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Invention breeds invention.
Alfred North Whitehead.
The greatest invention of the 19th century was the invention of the method of invention.
But what of actual inventions? Let's hear of one from that fertile inventor, J.B. Morton, better known as Beechcomber.
Dr. Strabismus, whom God preserve, of Utrecht, is carrying out research work with a view to crossing salmon with mosquitoes. He says it will mean a bite every time for fishermen.
And here's Beechcomber again, in the voice of Spike Milligan.
Many of our greatest inventions were the result of some happy accident. You consider the case of James Watt. Sitting at home one evening, Watt brooded over a boiling kettle. Suddenly, he jumped up with a cry of, "Eureka!" His wife, Eureka Watt, rushed into the kitchen. "What is it, Watt?" Or, "What? What is it?" Watt could hardly contain himself, but nobody's perfect. "Look," he cried, "there is the answer to all our transport problems." And without another word, he fitted four tiny wheels to the kettle, climbed inside, and took a cheap day excursion to Brighton.
Spike Milligan. The greatest flowering of the spirit of invention was probably during the second half of the 19th century. In England, the Victorians were full of wild ideas of what the world needed. And it seems it was the same on the other side of the Channel. Let's hear an extract from the work of the French humorist Alphonse Allais, translated by Miles Kington.
Now, humorists may think themselves very funny when they invent things like waterproof curtains for submarines or tiny muzzles to stop snails dribbling on lettuce plants. But they cannot hold a candle to the genuine, serious inventor. Next time you have a moment to spare, go along to the Ministry of Commerce and take a look at the thousands of patents registered by inspired inventors every day. I guarantee you'll be wreathed in smiles within 5 minutes, if not rocking with laughter. Here are a few samples of patented inventions just to whet your appetite. Now, I've copied everything down word for word. They are all genuine, believe me. A device for retrieving the mustard left inside used mustard jars. Ventilated shoes. An electrical indicator to remind one of the arrival of break time. An improved combination meerschaum pipe and police whistle. A luminous hat. A method of converting motorcycles into four-wheeled vehicles. A device for the use of ladies. A device to keep the body upright during long train journeys. An appliance for reducing overlarge mouths and making thin lips bigger. A bus without brakes. Combined fishing rod and bicycle pump. Etc., etc., etc. I could go on forever, but I won't.
Thank you, Alfred. But how many others must there be that never saw the light of day? J.K. Galbraith.
It's easy to overlook the absence of appreciable advance in an industry. Inventions that are not made, like babies that are not born, are rarely missed.
Some inventions are probably best left unmade. Michael Flanders and Donald Swan.
We have a song here, more or less as a postscript. It's about something, well, it's not really an animal, but it's certainly very much more than a mere vegetable. I refer, of course, to that fantastic, newly discovered hybrid, the wampum. If you have not yet heard of this fabulous new raw material, and it is, I'm proud to say, the discovery of a British scientist, a Professor Werner von Lebensraum, let us tell you something about the wampum and the factory in which it's turned into everything you could possibly want. Factory noises coming up.
You can do such a lot with a wampum. You can use every part of it too. For work or for pleasure, it's a triumph, it's a treasure. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do. Now the thread from the coat of a wampum has the warmth and the resilience of wool.
Just like wool.
You need never wash or brush it.
It's impossible to crush it.
And it shivers like the finest sort of tool.
So our clothes are all made from the wampum. Model gowns, sportswear, lingerie.
Going up.
They are waterproof and plastic.
Where it's needed and elastic.
And they emphasize the figure as you see.
Hail to thee, blithe wampum. Hail to thee, hope not. For providing wampum universal art. You can shave with the rind of a wampum.
Really?
And it acts as a soapless shampoo.
And the root in little doses keeps you free from halitosis.
Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Nothing that a wampum cannot do. Nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Now the thick inner shell of a wampum.
Change key.
You can mould with a finger and thumb. Though soft when you began it, it'll set as hard as granite, and it's quite as light as aluminium.
So we make what we like from the wampum, and that proves very useful indeed. From streets full of houses to the buttons on your trousers, with a wampum you have everything you need.
Gaudi arbus wampum, gladly we salute. Body make of wampum, philanthropic fruit. Oh, the thin outer leaf of a wampum makes the finest Havana cigar.
And its bottom simply bristles with unusual looking thistles, but we haven't yet discovered what they are.
You can do such a lot with a wampum. You can use every part of it too. For a work or for pleasure, it's a triumph, it's a treasure. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Oh, the flesh in the heart of a wampum has the flavor of porterhouse steak. And the juice is a liquor that will get you higher quicker, and you'll still it up next morning when you wake.
Wampum, let your voices ring. Wampum, evermore we sing.
To record what is what in a wampum needs a book twice as big as Who's Who. I could tell you more and more about this fascinating boring. You can shape it, you can square it, you can drape it, you can wear it, you can ice it, you can dice it, you can pare it, you can slice it. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do. Nothing that a wampum cannot do.
When you finally exhausted all the uses for a wampum, you blow down it and it becomes a bass tuba. Wampum, wampum. In the modern technological age, we've perhaps got rather blasé about inventions. There's so many new developments, and they're perfected and marketed so quickly, we tend to take them for granted. Mind you, man can't do everything. Joseph Wood Crutch.
Electronic calculators can solve problems which the man who made them cannot solve, but no government-subsidized commission of engineers and physicists could create a worm.
For that, you need a wife. And not all the side effects of inventions are desirable. Lewis Mumford.
By his very success in inventing labor-saving devices, modern man has manufactured an abyss of boredom that only the privileged classes in earlier civilizations have ever fathomed.
The advances in automation will have their effect on man as a species, according to Frank Lloyd Wright.
If automation keeps up, man will atrophy all his limbs but the push-button finger.
Let's turn away from that rather chilling view of the future to the past, to the days when a new invention was still a cause for excitement.
This is the thing on inventions and how it takes like 30, 40 years before an invention is really recognized as being a great invention. It's about Edison. And Edison is very excited about this new invention he's come up with. And he calls all these newspaper people together in this totally dark room. And on a table is a bulb with a filament inside and a cord running out of it. And there's a guy working on a generator over in the corner. And all the newspaper people pile in, and they say, what can this possibly be? And they're all kind of buzzing. And Edison walks in, and he takes the plug, and he plugs it into the generator, and this little bulb begins to glow, and glow, and glow, and glow, and finally it fills the entire room with light. Well, with this, the newspaper people run out. They want to file these stories right away, and Edison says, no, no, gentlemen, wait a minute, that isn't it. And he walks up to the bulb, and he says, hello?
Bob Newhart again. While we're on the subject of Edison, let's hear an anonymous thought.
If it hadn't been for Edison, we'd be watching television by candlelight.
To conclude, let's hear the considered opinion of that American falsetto balladeer and philosopher, Tiny Tim.
Why, the greatest invention in history is the safety pin. The second greatest is perforated toilet paper.
From Alfred and me, it's back to the drawing board.
Don't be silly, they haven't invented that yet. What's the matter?
Frank Muir Goes Into Inventions was produced by Simon Brett.